Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the one, the only Sean Sports Stop podcast. We have a shit ton to talk about. NFL Championship Weekend, the Super Bowl matchup is set. A certain conspiracy theory can be put to rest. NFL firings, hirings, the NBA trade deadline, along with the NHL trade deadline, is only a couple of weeks away, so we got plenty on that front. MLB free agency is still in full swing. Guys like Blake Snell and Cody Bellinger haven't even received offers yet. So a lot to, still determine in the MLB free agency world. But with all of that said, we're going to get right into it, starting with, you guessed it, the NFL. In the aftermath of a late season collapse spurred on by a porous defense that couldn't stop anyone or anything, the Philadelphia Eagles are bringing in one of the most respected minds in the NFL as their new defensive coordinator. Per Adam Schefter of ESPN, Vic Fangio is expected to sign a deal with the Eagles. Fangio always seemed like the obvious candidate for the Eagles when they announced that Sean Desai and Matt Patricia would not be returning to the coaching staff in 2024. Philadelphia signed Fangio to a short-term deal last season leading up to Super Bowl 57 to help with the team's preparation against the Kansas City Chiefs, the Eagles lost the Super Bowl, but even though it would have made a natural fit for Fangio to become the full-time defensive coordinator after Jonathan Gannon was named head coach of the Arizona Cardinals, he was instead hired by the Miami Dolphins. It was announced Wednesday that Fangio and the Dolphins agreed to mutually part ways. Fangio also has ties to Pennsylvania as he is a Dunmore native. He has family members who live in Dunmore. The Eagles will be hoping that Fangio can orchestrate a quick turnaround. They allowed the third most points per game at 25.2 and the sixth most yards per game at 356.1 during the season. Six of the last seven teams that played the Eagles this season scored at least 25 points, including 32 from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers led by Baker Mayfield in the NFC wildcard game. Fangio is one of two big additions the Eagles will be making to their coaching staff this offseason. They are also looking for a new offensive coordinator with Brian Johnson not coming back. So, Fangio is one of two big additions, but there notably is not one big subtraction, and that is head coach Nick Sirianni. I'm not the biggest fan of his, but I do think he should not be fired just yet. So head coach Nick Sirianni told reporters Wednesday they need to bring in, quote, new ideas from outside the building to reach their full potential. The Eagles went 11-6 during the season. There's no other way to describe their season other than a massive collapse. Considering the fact that, midway through the season, even later than midway through the season, they were considered by many to be the best team in the NFL. They had a 10-1 record. They looked unstoppable. But then they got their soul snatched by the San Francisco 49ers, and it would just all went downhill like an avalanche from there. So, yeah, Vic Fangio will likely be hired by the Philadelphia Eagles to help them out on defense. On episode 429, we talked about how, obviously, arguably the biggest NFL head coaching hiring there could be this offseason, Jim Harbaugh from the University of Michigan, makes his return to the NFL and his return to the Chargers franchise, becoming the new head coach of the Los Angeles Chargers, replacing the former head coach and former Los Angeles Rams defensive coordinator Brandon Staley, who might reclaim that same role that he used to have since the Rams defensive coordinator Raheem Morris became the new head coach of the Atlanta Falcons, notably beating out Bill Belichick. But I digress. We are going to switch gears to the NBA. Wes Unseld Jr. is out as Washington Wizards head coach amid the team's 7-36 start this season, but he will remain with the organization. According to a statement from Wizards president Michael Winger, Unseld will transition to an advisory role in the front office. Brian Keefe will serve as the interim head coach. Per The Athletic, Keefe will finish the season before the Wizards hire a full-time coach during the offseason. I mean, it's not like they have anywhere to rush. They are not making the playoffs. There is no need to rush to hire a full-time coach now. Unseld was in his third season as Washington's head coach, and he had a record of 77-130. So he would essentially lose two games for every game he won over the course of his tenure. He began his coaching career with the Wizards as an assistant from 2005 to 2011. When the Wizards declined to promote Unseld after the 2010-11 season, he left to become an assistant on Mark Jackson's staff with the Golden State Warriors. After one season with the Warriors, Unseld joined the Orlando Magic. He was fired along with the entire coaching staff midway through the 2014-15 season. Unseld's longest stint as a coach with one organization was six seasons with the Denver Nuggets From 2015 to 2021, he was hired when Michael Malone took over as head coach. Then Nuggets general manager Tim Connelly previously worked under Unseld's father, Wes Unseld, with the Wizards. When the Wizards hired Unseld, they were stuck in a state of purgatory because their roster was not good enough to contend, but they avoided trying to tear everything down. This resulted in back-to-back 35 and 47 records in his first two seasons, which again isn't terrible, but it's just not good. The Wizards finally went in on a rebuild over the summer by trading Bradley Beal to the Suns and Kristaps Porzingis to the Celtics. Their results on the floor have been rough, with an offense and defense that both rank in the bottom 10 in the NBA. Washington's 7-36 record is the second worst in the league, ahead of only the Detroit Pistons, who at the time of this podcast are at 5-39. Jeez. And the Wizards are also in the midst of a five-game losing streak, which includes a 129-117 loss to the aforementioned Pistons on January the 17th. Let us now talk about the NBA trade deadline and potentially some targets for each team. We're going in alphabetical order, so starting with the Atlanta Hawks. Austin Reeves from the Lakers, Quentin Grimes from the Knicks, and draft picks. Those are my three for the Hawks. Consecutive first-round exits may have convinced this front office that this core has extinguished its upside. Atlanta is up for anything other than deals involving Trae Young and Jalen Johnson, according to The Athletic, though the two-way wing this roster glaringly lacks may not be on the market. If the Hawks are shipping out DeJounte Murray, arguably the top player up for grabs, they need to be on the hunt for Trae Young's new backcourt mate. A complimentary connector like Austin Reeves would be perfect, though prying him away from the Lakers could prove impossible. I don't think the Lakers would trade Austin Reeves. Quentin Grimes is another option, as he's low maintenance. He's a 3-and-D guy that seems like a snug fit with Atlanta's ball-dominant lead guard. Finally, if the Hawks are shipping out some win-now talent, they need to get back some draft capital. They parted with several for DeJounte Murray in the first place, which is probably the reason why they're now asking for two firsts in return for him. Boston Celtics, I would say CeeDee Osman from the Spurs, Najee Marshall from the Pelicans, and John Conchar from the Grizzlies. There's a decent chance that Boston stands pat and does nothing, before the trade deadline, and I wouldn't necessarily hold that against them. They're a very stacked team. You know, they made trades in the offseason, as I just mentioned, Porzingis. They brought in Drew Holiday. They still have Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Al Horford, Derek White. It's a very solid team they got. If the Celtics can work around the obstacle of not having a budget to make a trade, they wouldn't mind adding another big wing. President of basketball operations, Brad Stevens, and their former coach, Brad Stevens, told reporters. Osman's value hovers near the high end of Boston's price range, but if the Shamrocks could afford him, he might actually find his way into postseason minutes. His jack-of-all-trades skill set seems tailor-made for a glue guy role on a good team, and while his arrival may not produce a major impact in any single area, he could make subtle contributions across the board. Marshall and Conchar are lower on the wish list with less in their offensive arsenals, but they're both steady team defenders who play with loads of energy and occasionally heat up from long distance. Brooklyn Nets, I would say DeJounte Murray, the aforementioned DeJounte Murray from the Atlanta Hawks, Tyus Jones from the Wizards, and draft picks. There is a world in which the Nets electrify this trade market by dangling Mikal Bridges, who would instantly become the best player available and could demand a king's ransom. We just aren't likely living in that reality, though, as Brooklyn's aim is instead to build and add talent around the two-way swingman instead of trading him. If that's the objective, then the Nets need to up their talent level, ideally finding a top-shelf floor general who can bring this roster together. The last time Murray had control of an offense, that was with the San Antonio Spurs in 2021-22, he averaged 21.1 points and 9.2 assists. Jones has never packed that kind of scoring punch, but he's a nearly mistake-free decision-maker, as he has a career 4.1 assists against 0.8 turnovers, who's shooting 37%+ from three for the fourth time in his last five seasons. While Brooklyn may be leaning toward buying, it should scan around for some selective selling options. It could always load up on assets now and cash them in for Bridges' co-star later, and it could be able to convert any of Dorian Finney-Smith, Royce O'Neal, or Spencer Dinwiddie into draft picks. If the Nets are not planning on re-signing Nick Claxton this summer, he would fetch a haul from any defense-focused shopper with issues in the interior. Charlotte Hornets, their number one target should be draft picks, followed by someone like Jalen Green from the Houston Rockets, and maybe a guy like Jonathan Kuminga from the Golden State Warriors. If not for the Detroit Pistons' historic losing streak, the hoops world might all be focused on how brutally bad things are going in Buzz City. The Hornets have a wholly atrocious and league-worst -11.2 net rating, which feels like a statistical cry for wholesale changes. Luckily, it appears Charlotte is on board. They just traded Terry Rozier to the Miami Heat for Kyle Lowry's expiring contract and a 2027 first-round pick, per Woj of ESPN, and it should continue exploring ways to turn players not named LaMelo Ball, Brandon Miller, Mark Williams, or Nick Smith Jr. into draft picks and or prospects. The Rockets remain committed to Jalen Green per Action Network, but the 2021 number two pick is catching enough awkward sideways glances due to his regression to wonder how firm Houston is on that stance. Kuminga is another former lottery pick who may need a scenery change to realize his full potential. Chicago Bulls, number one, draft picks. Number two, Malcolm Brogdon from the Blazers. And number three, Kevin Huerter from the Kings. While a deadline divorce between Zach LaVine and the Chicago Bulls feels best for all parties, it still may not come to fruition given his rock-bottom trade value as of now. Action Network noted the 28-year-old still has no takers and is regarded as a distressed asset on account of his playstyle, injury history, and contract. That still doesn't change the fact that a dream deadline for Chicago involves unloading him and getting back some kind of draft considerations. Outside of a LaVine deal, though, the Bulls aren't looking to rebuild per NBA insider Mark Stein. I'm not sure why. I mean, I think they need to blow it up. Trade LaVine, trade Nikola Vucevic, trade DeMar DeRozan, trade Alex Caruso. Just blow it all up. That's what I would do. But if Chicago wants to compete, then a shot creator like Brogdon or a net shredder like Huerter would both be helpful. When the Bulls previously discussed the LaVine deal with the Sacramento Kings, Herder's name was mentioned, according to Michael Scotto of Hoops Hype. The Cleveland Cavaliers, DeAndre Hunter, Atlanta Hawks, Royce O'Neal, Brooklyn Nets, and TJ McConnell from the Indiana Pacers. The offseason addition of Max Strus has yet to fully scratch Cleveland's itch for a two-way wing, so it's no surprise to hear the Cavs reportedly remain in the 3-and-D market, per NBA insider Mark Stein, who mentioned both Hunter and O'Neal as potential targets. Hunter offers more size and scoring, though fitting his $20.1 million salary onto the books would be a headache. It's also unclear how the Cavaliers could incentivize the Hawks to part with the 2019 number 4 pick, given their severe shortage of draft picks. Then again, given his ongoing injury issues, perhaps his trade price wouldn't be that steep. O'Neal, who has a connection with Donovan Mitchell dating back to their shared stint in Salt Lake City, wouldn't be a bad consolation prize, especially if his three ball ever heated back up. He's at 35.2% this season, but at 38% for his career. McConnell, meanwhile, could address the backup ball mover void created by Ricky Rubio's retirement. The Dallas Mavericks, Kyle Kuzma from the Wizards, Jeremy Grant from the Blazers, and Dorian Finney-Smith from the Nets. Dallas's backcourt combo of Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving may be the most dynamic guard group in basketball, and rookie center Derek Lively II does an impeccable impression of Tyson Chandler. Those three form the franchise's foundation, leaving the Mavs looking to upgrade the spots between them this trade season. If we can get a big who can also create off the dribble, that'd be a plus, Mavericks head of basketball operations Mark Cuban told 97.1 Freak FM's The Ben and Skin Show, 6'8 or bigger. In this trade market, Kuzma and Grant match that description better than anyone, though only the Mavs know if they're willing to pay in salary and trade costs what it would take to get them. Finney-Smith doesn't offer much creation, but he's a 3-and-D ace who has a history with this organization and a tight bond with Luka Doncic. Denver Nuggets, I would say Jae'Sean Tate from the Rockets. Jae'Sean Tate from the Rockets, Isaiah Jackson from the Pacers, and Dennis Smith Jr. from the Nets. I forgot about his existence. The defending champion Nuggets look even better than before, having posted a higher winning percentage, 682, up from 646, and a better net rating at 5.3, up from 3.3 than that banner-raising bunch. They may not sense a need to change anything about this roster. Small tweaks around the margins are at least worth considering, though. Denver never fully replaced Bruce Brown, so a shape-shifting defense-first wing such as Tate looms as the top option. Beyond that, the Nuggets could try to upgrade their bench at center or point guard. Jackson would add an above-the-rim element to this interior group, while Smith could make his mark as a pesky point-of-attack stopper. Detroit Pistons. Obviously, number one is draft picks, followed by someone like Gary Trent Jr. from the Raptors or Miles Bridges from the Hornets. The Detroit Pistons may not be done posting historic marks of futility, as they're on course to have the NBA's first sub-100 winning percentage. That's why they could be the rare cellar dweller looking to add talent, not subtract it. They were connected to the Pascal Siakam sweepstakes and have signaled an interest in buying, per Yahoo Sports. Detroit should rethink that or at least be open to some degree of selling. 30-somethings Bojan Bogdanovic and Alec Burks can't possibly have a long-term future with this franchise, so failing to flip at least one of them for draft assets would be a huge wasted opportunity, in my opinion. If the Pistons add anyone, they should look for players on a similar timeline to their young nucleus. Trent and Bridges are both 25 years old, so they fit from that sense. Plus, Detroit clearly needs more offense from its wing spots. The Pistons have shown interest in Bridges per Action Network. He's averaging 21 points and 7 rebounds in his return to the court after sitting out the entire 2022-23 season. He pleaded no contest to a felony domestic violence charge and was sentenced to 3 years of probation without jail time. He was also suspended 30 games by the NBA, with the first 20 coming last year before missing the first 10 this season. Golden State Warriors, DeJounte Murray, Atlanta Hawks, Clint Capela, Atlanta Hawks, and DeMar DeRozan, Chicago Bulls. While making a trade for the sake of doing something is rarely advisable, the Warriors appear to need a shakeup in the worst kind of way. They have a record-setting payroll and an unconscionable luxury tax bill, plus a losing record and 12th place in the Western Conference standings. Those things simply cannot coexist. One could argue that the Warriors might be better off selling at the deadline, but good luck convincing 35-year-old Steph Curry to waste one of his remaining prime seasons. The Warriors likely need to throw caution to the wind here and aim as high as their budget allows. The fact that these trade targets include a guard, a center, and a wing highlight how this group could use a lift literally anywhere. DeJounte Murray gets the top spot for being the best player, and his creation would address a nagging need for non-Curry offense. Capella is a way to fill voids for size and athleticism up front. DeRozan lands at number 3 since his lack of long-range shooting could spoil the spacing, but the Dubs could take the plunge anyway just to get a scoring, secondary playmaking, mid-range game, and late-game offense. How are we doing on time? Let me check. Oh, we're doing great. Next are the Houston Rockets, Daniel Gafford Wizards, Kelly Olynyk Jazz, and Bojan Bogdanovic Pistons. The Rockets might have an all-star candidate at center in Alperen Sengun, but the 5 spot could still have their focus this trade season. They just don't have great options behind the 21-year-old, as Jock Landale has been a massive disappointment, and Jeff Green, who's 37, can only handle the position in small batches against certain matchups. Houston is on the hunt for backup bigs and shooters per NBA insider Mark Stein. Gafford and Olynyk are both on the wish list per Action Network, so it's merely a matter of preference in sorting them out. Gafford gets the edge, as his above-the-rim skills would give this group a different dynamic, but it's possible Houston could covet Olynyk's superior shooting and table setting instead. Speaking of spacing, the Rockets need plenty more of it. That's why Space City could be an interesting landing spot for Bogdanovic, who's a 39.5% career three-point shooter who's burying 3 triples a night at a 41.1% clip this season. He's an elite three-point shooter. Indiana Pacers, Alex Caruso from the Bulls, DeLon Wright from the Wizards, and DraftKings. The Pacers not only made perhaps the biggest splash of trade season so far with the Pascal Siakam deal, but they also secured the top item on their wish list by adding an impact power forward. If they hope to keep climbing the ladder, though, they need to upgrade their 27th-ranked defense. It's a big enough issue that Indy could consider an aggressive move for Caruso, who won't be easy to lure out of the Windy City. If the Pacers pool their assets, though, they could give Chicago something to think about. If the Bulls are the slightest bit interested in brightening their future, they may have a hard time overlooking a package of, say, an unprotected future first and last summer's number 8 pick, Jairus Walker. If that's too rich, the Pacers could then pursue a bargain price deal for someone like DeLon Wright. He has battled injuries for much of this season, but he remains a capable shooter on most backcourt assignments. The Clippers. Sidy Osman from the Spurs, Otto Porter Jr. from the Raptors, and Chris Boucher from the Raptors as well. The Clippers, although they started like 0-5 or 0-6 when James Harden first came to town, they have been unstoppable since the start of December, posting a record of 19-4 and a dominant 7.6 net rating. They may still be in the market for a finishing piece, though, which Zach Lowe of ESPN said would likely be a tweener forward or backup center. Wing depth seemingly makes the most sense, given the injury histories of Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, plus the fact that they parted with 4 wings in the James Harden trade, you know, Robert Covington, Nicholas Batum, Marcus Morris Sr., and KJ Martin. Osman feels like the most attractive option in their price range, as his versatility should help him carve out a niche. Otherwise, LA could look north of the border to find veterans who can toggle between multiple frontcourt positions. Porter gets a slight preference for the number 2 spot since he'd have an obvious offensive role as a catch-and-shoot launcher, but the Clippers could just as easily covet Boucher for his length, rebounding, and shot blocking. Lakers. DeJounte Murray Hawks, no surprise. Bruce Brown Raptors and Malcolm Brogdon Blazers. If the Lakers are going to land a difference maker at the deadline, Murray is almost assuredly their guy. He's a top talent among realistic trade targets, plus the purple and gold have reportedly been engaged in the most substantive trade discussions with Atlanta on Murray per NBA insider Mark Stein. Of course, getting Murray to Hollywood could be tricky since the Lakers don't want to give up Austin Reeves and the Hawks don't want to get back D'Angelo Russell. Still, there's enough time before the buzzer sounds for LA to either soften its stance on Reeves, perhaps if Atlanta added someone else to the swap, or to find a third team willing to add Russell. A two-way connector like Brown could be big for this roster too, and the Lakers have coveted him for some time. Brogdon, meanwhile, could be a more cost-effective alternative to Murray, addressing similar backcourt needs for shooting and shot creation. LA could also keep things quiet for now in hopes of doing something major this summer when it unlocks the option of trading 3 first-round picks. Per Dave McManaman of ESPN, the Lakers have discussed internally the possibility of packing 3 picks along with players they already have on their books to pursue a bona fide star, such as Donovan Mitchell of the Cleveland Cavaliers or Trae Young of the same Atlanta Hawks. Grizzlies. Quentin Grimes, Knicks, DeAndre Hunter, Hawks, and draft picks. losing John Morant for the season should, you know, that's a huge gut punch for the Grizzlies, but it does ease some of the win now pressure that they might otherwise be feeling right now. Considering the lead guard suspension to start this season put this team behind the proverbial eight ball, Memphis may have been aggressively wheeling and dealing in an attempt to make up for lost time. The Grizzlies can be more judicious now and don't have to rush into anything. They should be opportunistic, though. If there's a chance to expand their core with a player such as Grimes or Hunter, both of whom are on the same timeline as John Morant, Desmond Bane, and Jaren Jackson Jr., that's probably a shot worth taking. Otherwise, Memphis could try floating some non-essential veterans like Luke Kennard, John Concher, and Xavier Tillman Sr. in search of draft assets. Quietly gauging the market on Marcus Smart wouldn't be the worst idea either. A perimeter trio with him, John Morant, and Desmond Bane seems problematically light on both size and spacing. Miami Heat, Ayo Dosunmu, Bulls, Nasir Little, Suns, and Chris Boucher, Raptors. Miami's move to bring Terry Rozier to South Beach ticked off the top priority on its to-do list. The Heat had to find more perimeter scoring and creation, and Rozier provides both. He may not be Damian Lillard per se, but he gives this offense plenty of juice regardless. It's possible the deal goes down as the only one Miami ends up making before the deadline, but it could seek out smaller swaps to upgrade its second unit. Dosunmu could be an improvement over Josh Richardson, helping to cover for some of the defensive deficiencies over Rozier-Tyler Hero backcourt. Little would add another high-energy defensive-minded forward to the mix, and Boucher could add length and shot blocking to a frontcourt that gets both from Bam Adebayo, but nothing really from anyone else. Milwaukee Bucks. Matisse Thybulle, Blazers, Royce O'Neal, Nets, and Chris Dunn, Jazz. While the Bucks likely planned on some defensive regression after swapping out Drew Holiday for Dame Lillard, they may not have foreseen such a steep decline. In a single season, they have torpedoed from 4th to 22nd in defensive efficiency, a collapse that surely contributed to the dismissal of coach Adrian Griffin, despite the Bucks having a 30-13 record at the time of his firing. Their deadline priority should be chasing the best defenders they can buy, though their options are limited by their myriad draft debts. Alex Caruso is way too costly for them, if he's even available. But Thybulle feels obtainable given his many issues on offense. O'Neal isn't quite as disruptive on defense, but he's a competent stopper with some versatility and a typically reliable outside shot. Dunn is absolutely ferocious on defense, but his offense can be non-existent, and it's tough to tell if the Jazz would even consider moving him as he's played an important role in their resurgence. Timberwolves, Tyus Jones, Wizards, Doug McDermott, Spurs, and Monte Morris, Pistons. If the Timberwolves tinker with their roster, and they may not given their prominent perch in the West standings, they'll surely focus on improving their 19th-ranked offense. While the starting five scores at the top 10 rate at 118.18 points per 100 possessions would be 7th, the second unit lags zip, specifically in the backcourt. Could a reunion with Tyus Jones, who spent his first four seasons in the Gopher State, be in the works? It's an interesting idea, both for the fact that he could organize the bench offense now and perhaps serve as the successor to Mike Conley, who is now 36 years old and unsigned past this season. Minnesota could look to up its three-point volume, 17th in makes, 23rd in attempts, with a proven perimeter marksman like Doug McDermott, or he could take a low-cost flyer on Monte Morris, who's been sidelined all season by a quad injury but offers high-level offensive management when healthy. The Pelicans, Jared Allen Cavs, Wendell Carter Jr. Magic, and Daniel Gafford Wizards. The Pelicans' 13-7 record over the past 20 games sounds and is impressive, but their plus 10.6 net rating over the stretch, second only to the Boston Celtics, suggests they could be even better. With plenty of picks and prospects to shop around, this is a group that could go big and bold between now and the deadline, and I think they should. Big enough to get Jared Allen, that might be a stretch given how valuable he's been in the Cleveland Cavaliers, but he is the name most commonly associated with them per Matt Moore of the Action Network. If nothing else, he still doesn't seem like an ideal long-term fit with Evan Mobley, so maybe there's a move to be made here. If not, the Pelicans can just run down the center list with players such as Wendell Carter Jr. and Daniel Gafford, surely in the crosshairs. Both look like better stylistic and timeline fits with Brandon Ingram and Zion Williamson than Jonas Valanciunas, who's a 31-year-old on an expiring contract. The New York Knicks, Jordan Clarkson, Utah Jazz, Bruce Brown, Raptors, and Malcolm Brogdon, Blazers. While the Knicks were wise to get their deal done for OG Anunoby, they lost some perimeter creation in the trade when they gave up both RJ Barrett and Emmanuel Quickley. They now don't have a second teamer averaging even 8 points a game. Clarkson could help fill that quick strike scoring void. He may not be the most efficient option you'll find, but he typically piles up production in a hurry. This is his seventh straight season averaging over 21 points per 36 minutes, plus he's averaging a career-high 6.1 assists per 36 minutes. The question is whether he's too valuable for the ascending Jazz to give up. Brown is on their radar per Woj of ESPN, and while the all-purpose swingman isn't a super potent scorer, he'd help this club in a number of ways. Brogdon is another option to suit up behind and alongside Jalen Brunson. The Oklahoma City Thunder. Kelly Olynyk from the Jazz, Royce O'Neal from the Nets, and Gordon Hayward from the Hornets. These are actually three guys. Kelly Olynyk, Royce O'Neal, and Gordon Hayward in recent years have all been on the Utah Jazz, but only Olynyk is currently on the Jazz. Apologies to all the trade machine maestros in the crowd, but an aggressive acceleration type of trade just doesn't seem to be in the works for the Oklahoma City Thunder. According to Action Network, there's no indication that OKC will do anything dramatic at the deadline. If OKC does anything, it might dabble on marginal moves for the front court reinforcements. The Thunder don't have much size outside of Chet Holmgren, so they could take a liking to Olynyk. They also aren't exactly loaded on the wing, so O'Neal might be another possibility. Hayward, to be clear, probably isn't happening, since his $31.5 million salary would be tricky to match. However, consolidating a few expendables and some draft considerations might be all it takes for the Hornets to bite. That might be a splashy-ish move the Thunder are willing to make. They could stand to add more shooting and creation, and a healthy Hayward provides both. Plus, his contract is up after this campaign's completion, so there would be long-term costs. The Orlando Magic, Anthony Simons Blazers, Quentin Grimes Knicks, and Malcolm Brogdon Blazers. Of all this kind of sort of feasible fake trades out there, Simons to Orlando is a personal favorite. The Magic need more offensive punch to pair with their 6th-ranked defense, and he'd be an awesome source to provide it, as his skill set covers everything from pull-up triples to rim rockers. And at 24 years old, he's at the perfect age to throw alongside Paolo Banchero and Franz Wagner. Simons also may not be available, so there's that. The Blazers still see him as a key building block, so perhaps this is nothing more than wishful thinking. Then again, Portland also has Shaden Sharpe and Scoot Henderson locked into its long-term plans, so Simons doesn't really feel untouchable. Otherwise, Orlando could be looking for scoring and spacing. Grimes and Brogdon check both boxes, though the former gets the nod for being younger and not having the same injury concerns as the latter. The Sixers, Dorian Finney-Smith Nets, Bogdan Bogdanovic Hawks, and Alex Caruso Bulls. The Sixers have enough trade chips to go star hunting, but this doesn't feel like the right time to splurge. DeJounte Murray is an imperfect fit alongside Tyrese Maxey. Zach LaVine is overpaid. DeMar DeRozan might shrink some of the attack lanes for Maxey and Joel Embiid. Philly should look for opportunities to improve, of course, but a high-end role player feels like the best option. Finney-Smith's combination of length, shooting, and defensive versatility bump him atop this wish list, but any of these players would be a good get. Bogdanovic could add another off-the-dribble scorer to the mix, and he'd be just as helpful for his off-ball movement and spot-up shooting. Caruso could help connect plenty of dots with his two-way playmaking. Phoenix Suns, Chris Dunn Jazz, Alec Burks Pistons, and Andre Drummond Bulls. The Suns committed themselves to an incredibly top-heavy roster, and they may have no regrets about that given how well Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, and Bradley Beal have played. Still, they're looking to support their stars any way they can, and have been mentioned as one of the more active teams on the trade market per Yahoo Sports. With few assets to offer, though, Phoenix's options are limited, to say the least. Who knows, even a few of these names might be optimistic. The Suns could use a lockdown perimeter defender like Chris Dunn, but would the Jazz let him go for a salary filler and multiple second-round picks? I don't think so. Burks would be a clean fit for his shooting, off-the-dribble scoring, and serviceable defense, but he also may draw more than Phoenix can offer. Drummond almost assuredly fits the trade budget, provided the Bulls would let him go, and he'd give Phoenix another presence on the glass. His skill set is narrow, though, and his role would be small as well. The Blazers, obviously draft picks, Jonathan Kuminga Warriors, and Jairus Walker Pacers. Portland's first season of the post-Dame Lillard era has gone as expected, with loads of growing pains and very few wins. That's fine and should be forecasted for the foreseeable future, so it feels like the perfect time to unload their remaining veterans for more long-term assets, except the Blazers maybe don't see it that way. At least not with Jeremy Grant, whom they've been described as being resistant to trade. They should rethink that, because despite having a burdensome 5-year, $160 million contract, he could have legitimate value in the market. Grant and Malcolm Brogdon both look the Blazers' keys for brightening their future through draft picks, prospects, or both. If they wind up with young players, they should look to fill the forward spots with high-ceiling types like Kuminga and Walker. Let us now talk about more NBA. Now the Kings. Kyle Kuzma, Jeremy Grant, and Bojan Bogdanovic. The Kings seem eager to get something done, so eager in fact, there are actual Zach LaVine rumblings happening for some reason. He wouldn't solve anything for this team, which needs more defense and an upgrade at the forward spot. That's where Kuzma, Grant, and Bogdanovic come in. Luckily, in that order, you could still maybe flip a coin to find the better basketball fit between Kuzma and Grant, but the former lands higher here for being younger and cheaper. Bogdanovic's defensive limitations make him a less than perfect fit, but Sacramento can never have too much shooting around De'Aaron Fox and Domantas Sabonis. The Spurs. Draft picks, DeJounte Murray, that's funny, and Killian Hayes. Excluding four games in October, January has been the Spurs' best month of this season. They've dropped 8 of 11 games and can only claim victories over the Hornets, Pistons, and Wizards, so the idea that they are not looking to sell off veterans for draft picks is a head-scratcher, and hopefully they'll come to their senses sooner rather than later. It was added that the Spurs have called around in search of ready-made players they can win with, and those players better be point guards. That's the weak point of this roster, which makes a potential reunion with DeJounte Murray intriguing. Having someone who can ease the burden on Victor Wembanyama would be big, though only the Spurs know whether that's enough of a price to part with multiple first-round picks. San Antonio could sift through the bargain bin for a ball mover, which potentially puts Killian Hayes on the radar. He's been a colossal disappointment in Detroit, but get him out of that situation and away from the expectations that came from being the number 7 pick in 2020, and maybe he could find a role with the Spurs. Yeah, so with that, we are now going to transition to, let's see, to some WWE, actually. Former WWE staffer Janelle Grant filed a lawsuit Thursday in which she alleged that longtime WWE chairman and CEO Vince McMahon sexually abused her and sex trafficked her to others within the company. According to the Wall Street Journal, Grant signed a non-disclosure agreement in 2022, under which she agreed to remain silent about her allegations and her relationship with McMahon in exchange for $3 million. Grant alleges in her lawsuit that payments stopped after an initial $1 million payment, so she is seeking to void the agreement and is suing for unspecified damages. Additionally, Grant alleges in the lawsuit that McMahon had her, quote, create personalized sexual content for a WWE superstar that he was trying to re-sign. The suit didn't name the professional wrestler, but described him as both a UFC fighter and WWE talent. People familiar with the matter identified the wrestler as Brock Lesnar, one of WWE's and UFC's biggest names. In the lawsuit, which names WWE, McMahon, and former WWE head of talent relations John Laurinaitis as defendants, Grant alleges that McMahon pressured her into sexual situations and degraded her in exchange for giving her a job at WWE as administrator coordinator in WWE's legal department after meeting her in 2019. Grant states in the lawsuit that in June 2021, McMahon and another executive locked her in her office and took turns sexually assaulting her. She also alleged that days later, McMahon locked her in his private locker room and, quote, forced himself on her. McMahon allegedly sent explicit text message to Grant and to other people within WWE about Grant, and Grant provided screenshots as part of the lawsuit. In one text, McMahon allegedly wrote to Grant, quote, I'm the only one who owns you and controls who I want to fuck you. McMahon allegedly sent explicit photos of Grant to other people in WWE, and when others at WWE expressed interest in having sex with Grant after seeing photos on his phone, McMahon allegedly texted, quote, she may scream and try to say no, although it would be difficult to say anything with a cock down her throat. Jesus. Grant alleged that McMahon told her on multiple occasions to go to Laurinaitis' hotel rooms and have sex with him before workdays. Regarding Lesnar, Grant alleged that after he signed a new contract, McMahon allegedly texted Grant, quote, that part of the deal was fucking you. McMahon allegedly gave Lesnar Grant's cell phone number, and Lesnar allegedly asked her to send a video of herself urinating. Jesus Christ. Lesnar, who is married to former WWE star Sable, allegedly told Grant he wanted to, quote, set a play date in December 2021, but a snowstorm canceled plans. Grant said in the lawsuit that McMahon pressured her to sign a non-disclosure agreement in January 2022 when his wife Linda McMahon became aware of their relationship. In July 2022, McMahon retired from WWE after it was reported that he paid multiple women $14.6 million to remain silent about sexual encounters with him and allegations of sexual misconduct. A WWE Board of Directors investigation found that McMahon improperly failed to report the payments as business expenses, and he was required to repay the company for the cost of the investigation. Grant alleges that WWE tried to minimize her allegations of sexual assault by making the investigation more about the payments and how they were reported. McMahon returned to WWE in January 2023 and helped orchestrate the sale of the company to Endeavor Group Holdings, which also owns the UFC. WWE and the UFC have since merged into a single company called TKO Group Holdings, and McMahon is the executive chairman. On Tuesday, the 78-year-old McMahon was present at the New York Stock Exchange as part of the TKO contingent after it was announced that WWE had reached a reported 10-year, $5 billion deal for Raw to air exclusively on Netflix beginning in 2025. None of McMahon, Laurinaitis, or Lesnar have commented on the allegations, but McMahon's lawyer, Jerry McDevitt, said in 2022 that McMahon had a consensual relationship with Grant, who hadn't yet been named at the time. So, that is that. Now we are going to transition back to some actual sports in the NFL. After firing their head coach in each of the last two seasons, the Carolina Panthers are certainly hoping that their next hire will last longer. The team announced that Buccaneers offensive coordinator Dave Canales was named their head coach on Thursday. Canales, who's 42 years old, spent the 2023 season as the offensive coordinator of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, marking the first time he served as a coordinator beyond the high school level. I mean, Jesus Christ, Panthers. With Canales calling the plays, quarterback Baker Mayfield had a resurgent season, throwing for 4,044 yards, 28 touchdowns, and 10 interceptions for the NFC South champion Buccaneers, who won a playoff game over the Philadelphia Eagles, where Mayfield threw for 337 yards, 3 touchdowns, and no interceptions. Canales will be taking over a Carolina team that finished with the worst record in the NFL this past season at 2-15. The Panthers would have had the number one pick in the 2024 draft, but they traded it to the Chicago Bears last year to move up and select 2023 number one pick Bryce Young. Young struggled during his rookie season behind a shaky offensive line. In 16 games, he was sacked a whopping 62 times, which ranked second in the NFL. He completed only 59.8% of his passes for 2,877 yards, 11 touchdowns, and 10 interceptions. To make matters worse, CJ Stroud, who was selected after him, balled the fuck out. But I still think that Bryce Young will figure it out. And hopefully that coaching hire works for the Panthers. We got more football to talk about. The NFL award finalists have been named. For MVP, Josh Allen, quarterback from the Buffalo Bills. Lamar Jackson, quarterback from the Baltimore Ravens. Dak Prescott, quarterback from the Dallas Cowboys. Brock Purdy, quarterback from the San Francisco 49ers. And Christian McCaffrey, running back from the San Francisco 49ers. I think CMC has had a stellar season. The MVP is obviously a quarterback award, and Lamar Jackson will almost certainly win it. And he's had an unbelievable season, don't get me wrong, but I truly think that Christian McCaffrey is the deserved MVP for this season. Offensive player of the year, Tyreek Hill, wide receiver from the Miami Dolphins, Lamar Jackson, quarterback from the Baltimore Ravens, CeeDee Lamb, wide receiver from the Dallas Cowboys, Christian McCaffrey, running back for the 49ers, and Dak Prescott, quarterback for the Cowboys. I would give this one to either, again, CMC, Lamar, or Tyreek Hill. Defensive player of the year, Deron Bland, cornerback from the Dallas Cowboys, Max Crosby, defensive end from the Las Vegas Raiders, Myles Garrett, defensive end from the Cleveland Browns, Micah Parsons, linebacker from the Dallas Cowboys, and TJ Watt, linebacker from the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think it's TJ Watt. I think he's the best defensive player in the NFL right now. Offensive rookie of the year. This one, I'm gonna have a controversial take on this one. Jahmyr Gibbs, running back from the Detroit Lions, Sam Laporta, tight end, Detroit Lions, Puka Nacua, wide receiver, Los Angeles Rams, Bijan Robinson, running back, Atlanta Falcons, and CJ Stroud, quarterback, Houston Texans. CJ Stroud will almost certainly win this award, but it should be Puka Nacua. The season he's had as a fifth-round pick is absolutely unbelievable, absolutely unheard of. But with Cooper Kupp not winning the MVP 2 years ago, I have no faith in the rightful winner, Puka Nacua, winning Offensive Rookie of the Year. Defensive Rookie of the Year, we got Will Anderson, defensive end from the Houston Texans, Jalen Carter, defensive tackle from the Philadelphia Eagles, Joey Porter Jr., cornerback, Pittsburgh Steelers, Kobe Turner, defensive tackle, Los Angeles Rams, and Devin Weatherspoon, cornerback, Seattle Seahawks. I would go with Jalen Carter on this one. Comeback Player of the Year, Joe Flacco, quarterback, Cleveland Browns, Baker Mayfield, quarterback, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Matthew Stafford, quarterback, Los Angeles Rams, Tua Tagovailoa, quarterback, Miami Dolphins, and DeMar Hamlin, safety, Buffalo Bills. I think it should be either Joe Flacco or Matthew Stafford personally, although it will almost certainly be DeMar Hamlin and it'll be politicized and fuck that. Coach of the Year, Dan Campbell, Detroit Lions, John Harbaugh, Baltimore Ravens, DeMeco Ryans, Houston Texans, Kyle Shanahan, 49ers, and Kevin Stefanski, Browns. This is a tough one for me. It's between Stefanski and Ryans. I would give the edge to DeMeco Ryans just because, you know, the Houston Texans were a bottom feeder, you know, a lottery team every single season, and all of a sudden they make the playoffs this year with all their dynamic rookies and their rookie head coach. For them, he's a rookie. And lastly, assistant of the year, Ben Johnson, offensive coordinator, Detroit Lions, Mike McDonald, defensive coordinator, Baltimore Ravens, Todd Monken, offensive coordinator, Baltimore Ravens, Jim Schwartz, defensive coordinator, Cleveland Browns, and Bobby Slowick, offensive coordinator, Houston Texans. I would give this one either Slowick or Mike McDonald. The Ravens defense was nothing short of elite. We got more football to talk about, believe it or not. NFL Executive Vice President Peter O'Reilly is confident in the playing surface for Super Bowl 58 following last year's questionable field conditions. O'Reilly detailed the process of getting the field ready for the February 11th game at Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas. Quote, we have brought in, as we do each year, a brand new natural grass surface that is currently installed in the field tray outside Allegiant Stadium. So that has been in for a little bit now and is working through all of our standard testing procedures that will take place over the time from installation all the way up through that Saturday right before the game. Those adjustments and a core maintenance program are in place, so we have an optimal field on game day. We have a great team maintaining it as we head up to the Super Bowl. Last year's game in Glendale, Arizona saw subpar field conditions as the Kansas City Chiefs defeated the Philadelphia Eagles, with both teams clearly affected by the field. It also took on damage from the halftime show, making things even worse in the second half. O'Reilly, the grounds crew, and both teams involved in this year's game are hoping for a better setup. After last year's conditions, the pressure will be on for the NFL to step things up this year. The rigorous preparation process for the field is nothing new, though. Last year's grass took 18 months of preparation, only for it to fold under the pressure of the biggest event of the NFL season. This year's grass was brought in from California and is a hybrid Bermuda variety, per the Las Vegas Review-Journal's Mick Akers. While last year's grass was also a Bermuda variety, this year's will be a brand new grass, as O'Reilly noted. The grass, which sits on a fuel tray outside of the domed Allegiant Stadium, has already been moved to Las Vegas and will be maintained there in the weeks ahead. The fuel tray, which was also used at State Farm Stadium last year, allows the grass to move in and out of the stadium as needed. Hopefully the grass will be good. Let's talk about Raheem Morris. I mentioned it briefly, but former Los Angeles Rams defensive coordinator Raheem Morris will be the next head coach of the Atlanta Falcons. According to CBS Sports, the Rams will get a pair of compensatory picks as a result of the Falcons hiring Morris. They will be 2024 and 2025 third-round picks. The news comes as somewhat of a surprise as former New England Patriots, you know, legendary head coach Bill Belichick at one point appeared to be the front-runner for the job after interviewing with the franchise twice and even reportedly being flown out to Atlanta on Blank's private jet. The Falcons were looking for a new head coach because they fired Arthur Smith just hours after the end of the season. Quote, decisions like this are never easy and they never feel good. Morris won't have the highest of bars to clear to demonstrate improvement considering the Falcons went 7-10 in each of Smith's three seasons. They were consistently mediocre, not great, not terrible, just fucking mediocre, and surely frustrated as they continue to fall just short in the NFC South, which should be noted is not a good division. Let's transition now to the NBA, shall we? Los Angeles Lakers forward LeBron James and Milwaukee Bucks forward Giannis Antetokounmpo will once again serve as captains for the NBA All-Star Game. The pair received the most fan votes for their respective conferences. As is customary, the fan returns only accounted for 50% of the overall vote to fill out the starting squads for the Eastern and Western conferences. The players and media each accounted for 25% of the final tally as well. So the starters in the East are Giannis Antetokounmpo, Milwaukee Bucks, Joel Embiid, Philadelphia 76ers, Jason Tatum, Boston Celtics, Tyrese Halliburton, Indiana Pacers, and Dame Lillard, Milwaukee Bucks. In the West, it's LeBron James, Lakers, Nikola Jokic, Denver Nuggets, Kevin Durant, Phoenix Suns, Luka Doncic, Dallas Mavericks, and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Oklahoma City Thunder. Plenty of All-Star mainstays are represented in the 10-man group. LeBron is an All-Star for the 20th time, moving him ahead of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar for the most ever. The 39-year-old continues to defy the aging curve by averaging 25 points, 7 rebounds, and 7.5 assists through 40 games with the Lakers. Likewise, Phoenix Suns forward Kevin Durant has yet to show many effects from the Achilles injury that wiped out his 2019-20 season, as he's averaging 29 points and a 53% shooting to punch his ticket to the All-Star game for the 14th time. The NBA's international influence is once again evident. Antetokounmpo from Greece earned his 8th All-Star nod, Luka Doncic from Slovenia with his 5th, Nikola Jokic from Serbia with his 6th, Joel Embiid from the Sixers from Cameroon with his 7th. They're all on pace to have double-digit All-Star appearances when all is said and done. For Indiana Pacers guard Tyrese Halliburton, getting All-Star starter status symbolizes his continued ascent. The 23-year-old was an All-Star reserve last year, and his 23.6 points, along with an NBA-high 12.6 assists a game, made him impossible to deny as an All-Star starter. It is now up to the head coaches to determine the reserves. The results of their votes will be announced February 1st on TNT. The 2024 All-Star game will see a return to the tradition, with the league reverting to the East versus West format and scrapping the draft. I think that's awesome. The final target score for the fourth quarter is a thing of the past as well. The elimination of the draft and target score came as a bit of a surprise because both innovations helped to refresh the annual event. NBA Commissioner Adam Silver said the decision came after a conversation with Golden State Warriors guard Chris Paul, who pointed out how all the pomp and circumstance in addition to the different rules led players to view the All-Star game unlike a typical basketball game. "We're sending mixed signals," Silver said. "And if we want guys to treat this like a real game, and again, this is not about finals intensity, it's just a fun game. But if we want players to treat it that way, we have to treat it that way. And so it means that the introduction is going to have to be a little bit shorter and halftime is going to have to be a little bit more typical, starting in Indianapolis." The All-Star game will tip off February 18th at Gainbridge Fieldhouse in Indianapolis. Let's see, what do we got next? Let's talk about Bill Belichick. The Seattle Seahawks and Washington Commanders are the last two teams remaining with head coaching vacancies, but it sounds like neither is interested in one of the greatest coaches of all time, and I wouldn't imagine that he would be interested in them either. The Athletic reported on Thursday that former New England Patriots head coach Bill Belichick is viewed as a long shot for both the Seahawks and Commanders openings. So that is the latest on Bill Belichick. Let's see, what do we got next? We got to talk about some soccer. This is big. We're at 44 minutes. The 60 minutes is the maximum. Liverpool manager Jurgen Klopp will leave the club at the end of the 2023-24 season, he announced on Friday. Quote, "I can understand that it's a shock for a lot of people in this moment when you hear it for the first time, but obviously I can explain it, or at least try to explain it. I love absolutely everything about this club. I love everything about the city. I love everything about our supporters. I love the team. I love the staff. I love everything. but that I still take this decision shows you that I am convinced it is the one I have to take. It is that I am, how can I say it, running out of energy. I have no problem now, obviously. I knew it already for longer that I will have to announce it at one point, but I am absolutely fine now. I know that I cannot do the job again and again and again and again. LeBron James, who owns a stake in Liverpool through Fenway Sports Group, sent a message of appreciation to Klopp on Friday saying, quote, "Thank you for everything and more. You are one hell of a manager and you'll never be forgotten. And more importantly, you'll never walk alone. The Reds will miss you." Klopp joined Liverpool in 2015 after a successful stint at Borussia Dortmund in Germany. He led the club to a Champions League title in 2019 and he won the Premier League in 2020. Liverpool currently has a 5-point lead in the Premier League table, so he might win the league with them again on his way out. Before Klopp's arrival, Liverpool had not won a league crown since 1989-90. Klopp is not calling his decision to step away to retirement, though he said he does not anticipate managing again at this time. He said he will never coach a different English club, saying, quote, "If you ask me now if I will ever manage again, I would say no. But you don't know, obviously, as I've never had this situation. But I do know definitely I will never manage a different club in England than Liverpool. It is impossible. I will find something else to do, but I will not manage a club or country for at least a year." Klopp first informed Liverpool management of his decision in November because he did not want to blindside the club as it was preparing for next season. He said he was motivated to return after a difficult 2022-23 season in order to get Liverpool back on the rails so he could leave the team better than he found it. Liverpool finished no worse than third in the Premier League table in four straight seasons before a fifth place finish last year. Klopp's contract was set to end in 2026. Liverpool's ownership group, Fenway Sports Group, released a statement saying the club will wait until the end of the season to begin a coaching search and it will be business as usual for the remainder of this season. So Klopp is an absolute legend of, you know, Liverpool, and I say that as a diehard Manchester United fan. Let's talk about some college football now. The Michigan Wolverines have found their next head coach. The school announced that offensive coordinator / offensive line coach Sharon Moore has been hired to replace Jim Harbaugh, who left the program in January to take the Los Angeles Chargers head coaching job in his highly anticipated return to the NFL. Moore's contract is for 5 years and it starts at $5.5 million, according to the Associated Press. Moore will now be tasked with continuing to set the standard at Michigan and will also aim to replicate the level of success that Harbaugh found during his 9-year tenure as head coach. So the Michigan has found a new coach. An update on the whole Vince McMahon situation. He resigned and he released a statement saying, quote, "I stand by my prior statement that Ms. Grant's lawsuit is replete with lies, obscene made-up instances that never occurred, and is a vindictive distortion of the truth. I intend to vigorously defend myself against these baseless accusations and look forward to clearing my name. However, out of respect for the WWE universe, the extraordinary TKO business and its board members and shareholders, partners and constituents, and all of the employees and superstars who helped make WWE into the global leader it is today, I have decided to resign from my executive chairmanship and the TKO board of directors effective immediately." So that is the latest. Vince McMahon has resigned. Let's talk about some tennis real quick. Aryna Sabalenka is an unstoppable force at the Australian Open after capturing her second straight tournament title in easy fashion with a 6-3, 6-2 win over Qin Wen Zhang in the final on Saturday. The 25-year-old needed only 75 minutes to secure the championship, so absolutely dominant performance for her. Let's talk about some more NBA. The Milwaukee Bucks were not the only team that had interest in hiring Doc Rivers as their head coach. Speaking to reporters on Saturday, Rivers said he was contacted by multiple teams about potentially coaching this season, but he wanted to wait for the right opportunity before jumping back in, and then the Bucks' opportunity presented itself. Per Woj of ESPN, Rivers was one of four finalists for the Phoenix Suns job before they eventually settled on Frank Vogel. So that is the latest on Doc Rivers. Jim Harbaugh. In a move that was expected if Jim Harbaugh returned to the NFL, Michigan defensive coordinator Jesse Minter is going to follow him, and he will be the new defensive coordinator of the Los Angeles Chargers. We got more on Bill Belichick as well. It does not appear that former New England Patriots head coach Bill Belichick will land a new gig in 2024, but the 8-time Super Bowl champion still reportedly seeks a return to the sideline. Quote, "Crazy as it sounds, Bill Belichick is unlikely to coach in the NFL in the 2024 season. It will be the first time since the 1974 season that Belichick has not been with an NFL team, but sources tell CBS Sports not to count out the GOAT out for 2025. There remains a desire for Belichick to return to the sidelines. He just has to do it on his terms." That is the latest on Bill Belichick. Let's transition to the NBA. Julius Randle was declared out of the New York Knicks matchup with the Miami Heat on Saturday after a hard fall while driving to the basket in the fourth quarter. After the game, Woj of ESPN reported that Randle suffered a dislocated shoulder and noted that x-rays didn't show much damage to the shoulder, but Randle will undergo an MRI on Saturday night. Reinold collided with Heat rookie Jaime Jaquez Jr. as he attempted to finish a layup. Falling to the floor, he appeared to be in serious pain and immediately entered the Knicks locker room. Prior to his exit, Reinold recorded 19 points, 10 rebounds, and 3 assists in 32 minutes of action. So that would be a big loss, a huge loss for the New York Knicks if he is out long-term. More NBA. Adam Silver is finalizing a long-term contract extension to remain the NBA's commissioner through the 2020s per Woj of ESPN. The 61-year-old Silver has served as the NBA's commissioner since February 1st, 2014, after succeeding his predecessor David Stern following a unanimous vote from the league's Board of Governors. The Duke graduate has worked for the NBA since 1992. His previous roles include NBA Deputy Commissioner and COO, President and CEO of NBA Entertainment, NBA Chief of Staff, and Special Assistant to the Commissioner. Silver is just the fifth person to oversee the NBA as its commissioner, following in the footsteps of Maurice Podoloff, J. Walter Kennedy, Larry O'Brien, and David Stern. Silver has already encountered a host of challenges as the league commissioner, including the removal of Donald Sterling as the Los Angeles Clippers governor, the suspension and then continuation of the 2019-20 season due to the COVID-19 pandemic, and the completion of an NBA and NBPA's collective bargaining agreement, which runs through 2029-30. So Adam Silver, I think, has been a great commissioner. We got more football to talk about. The Philadelphia Eagles have found their replacement for Brian Johnson, and it will be former Dallas Cowboys and Los Angeles Chargers offensive coordinator Kellen Moore. He is the new offensive coordinator of the Philadelphia Eagles. Let's talk about some tennis real quick. The 2024 Grand Slam season opened in dramatic fashion as Jannik Sinner overcame a 0-2 set deficit to beat Daniil Medvedev 3-6, 3-6, 6-4, 6-4, 6-3 in the men's singles final of the Australian Open. Sinner became the first Italian to win the Australian Open. Now, we have to talk about Championship Sunday. The San Francisco 49ers are headed to Super Bowl 58. Brock Purdy bounced back from a shaky first half to help lead the 49ers to a huge 34-31 comeback win over the Detroit Lions in the NFC Championship game at home last night at Levi's Stadium. The Niners are now in the Super Bowl for the second time under head coach Kyle Shanahan, marking the organization's eighth overall appearance in the championship game. The 49ers' 17-point rally tied the largest comeback in the history of the NFC Championship game. San Francisco was also the last team to do so in 2012. The effort was 1 point shy of tying the overall comeback record in a conference championship game, which was held by the Cincinnati Bengals and Indianapolis Colts. The Lions led 24-7 at halftime, while Purdy threw for only 93 yards to go along with an interception. San Francisco flipped the script in the second half thanks to strong performances in all three phases of the game. Purdy finished the night with 267 yards and a touchdown, as well as the aforementioned interception, rushing for 48 yards on 5 attempts as well. All of his yards on the ground came in the second half. NFL fans were pleasantly surprised by his off-script decision making through the final two quarters. Brock Purdy really balled out. You know, you got to give credit where it's due. Mr. Irrelevant balled the fuck out. Christian McCaffrey obviously was also a major factor for the Niners' second half comeback, recording 90 yards and 2 touchdowns on 20 carries. His second score allowed the Niners to tie the game at 24 apiece, officially erasing the 17-point deficit. McCaffrey showcased his skills as a dual threat back, totaling 4 catches and picking up 42 yards as a receiver. So a monster game for him as well. So he had 20 carries, 4 receptions, 132 total yards, 2 rushing touchdowns. And he now has 25 total touchdowns this season, which is the most since LaDainian Tomlinson had 33 in 2006. Huge collapse for the Lions, though. And we got to talk about the other championship game. The Kansas City Chiefs once again advanced to the Super Bowl. I just needed, as a diehard Los Angeles Rams fan who doesn't really like the Kansas City Chiefs all that much, especially because of the whole Taylor Swift thing and Mr. Pfizer, Travis Kelce, and Jackson Mahomes, I was hoping that either the Baltimore Ravens or Detroit Lions would win and advance to the Super Bowl, so I would have a clear team that I could cheer for. Of course, both of them lost. The Chiefs edged out the Ravens 17-10 on the road in a pretty shitty game, if we're being honest. I expected much more from the Ravens and the fact that they were the one seed. Mahomes, you know, great game. 30 of 39, 241 yards, only 1 touchdown, no interceptions. Pacheco, game to forget. 24 carries, 68 yards. That's only 2.8 yards a carry and a rushing touchdown. Travis Kelce balled the fuck out. 11 receptions, 116 yards. That's 10.5 yards a reception and a receiving touchdown as well. Rashee Rice had 8 receptions for 46 yards. Marquez Valdes-Scantling had 2 receptions for 38 yards. For the Ravens, Lamar Jackson, 20 of 37, 272 passing yards, 1 touchdown, 1 interception. He also added 54 rushing yards on 8 carries. That's 6.8 yards a carry for Lamar Jackson. Zay Flowers led the way for the Ravens on the receiving side. 5 receptions, 115 yards. That's 23 yards per reception and a receiving touchdown. Nelson Aguilar had 1 reception for 39 yards. Odell Beckham Jr. had a very quiet game, only 3 receptions for 22 yards, but that is over 7 yards a reception. So ladies and gentlemen, this is all we have for episode number 430 of the Sean Sports Talk Podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. I appreciate it so much. I love doing this shit. And thank you guys so much for listening. Shout out to Crimson IT. I'll see you guys on episode number 431. I'm out. Peace.